Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, I have on as my special guest a woman who simply calls herself Tina. She is the adult child of alcoholics. She'll talk frankly about this experience and how she managed to survive a challenging childhood. More challenges took place when she was an adult. She developed a bipolar disorder with devastating depressions and frightening episodes of mania. She provides hope to those who are still struggling. She is the mother of three girls, one of whom happens to have recently come out as a bisexual. Tina is very supportive of this child and loves her just the same. So with that said, I'd like to introduce Tina. Tina, how are you tonight?
Hello, and yourself?
Good, good. I'm so happy to have you on the show. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for asking.
My pleasure. So I would like to start off kind of at the beginning and ask you a little bit of what your family of origin was like.
I come from a long line of alcoholics, grandparents, aunts, uncles, and both my parents are alcoholics.
Well, there was some technical difficulty. I've got two phones going here, and my regular phone cut out on me.
Oh, no.
So, yes. So, at any rate, I'm back, and I didn't hear what you said, Tina. But at any rate, I appreciate your answer to the question. So can you talk about the dysfunction in your family, if you haven't already done that?
It didn't feel dysfunctional growing up. It wasn't until I was a teenager and started going out and seeing how other people lived that I really noticed how insane it was at home.
I'm going to try something here. Okay. I think I have you back. Can you hear me, Tina?
I can hear you.
Great. Okay.
Can't hear you.
Okay, I'm back again. The question was there any childhood trauma that went on for you?
My father is a sexual predator. So there's some of that trauma.
And were you a victim of that?
It was very strange. It was not out in the open, anything you could put your finger on. It was very, very sneaky, kind of. Where if I brought it to the attention of others, they would say, it's just your perception. It's just your body changing and you're reacting to be, you know, men. And it was a hug that lasted too long, a hand on the thigh that went up a little bit too much. It was always something that could be explained away.
Well, that must have made it very crazy making for you.
It was interesting. My mother used to tell me that it was my perception. My perception was off. But since I have grown up, other family members have commented on it and how being with him has made them feel and makes them feel today. So I know it's not all in my head.
How
which
did
was
it
a
make
common
you feel?
Thing growing up.
Yeah. How did it make you feel to have your mother tell you it was all in your head?
I felt like there was something seriously wrong with me.
Oh.
Yeah, that's, first of all, how could I even think about something like that with my father? And because it wasn't talked about, I went for years thinking, this is just me. This is just me being uncomfortable and super sensitive. And that's what I got told, that I was just being super sensitive.
How did you ever manage to get through that, and what were the repercussions?
Well, I got into a very sexually abusive relationship when I was 15 that was all about power and control and a sexual fashion. And it was not the ideal situation, but it was comfortable. I knew what it felt like, and I didn't know anything different, and carried on the dysfunction in a new relationship.
And has that continued throughout your adult relationships?
It has not. I met a wonderful man who was very patient and kind and caring, and we got married, and he held my hand for the first 3 years and was very patient and allowed me to work things out, encouraged me to work things out, and it was a very slow progress, but he stood by me, and it was wonderful.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You deserve that. Have you experienced any recovery from some of these wounds from childhood?
Yes and no. I had made peace with it and moved on. But then I have three beautiful daughters, and over the years I have wanted them to have a relationship with their grandfather, my father, and it was always about sharing the best of my parents because they're lovable people. They just are ill.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to share the best of my parents with my children while keeping them away from the not-so-good part. And I was able to do that quite successfully for a long time. But when my oldest daughter turned 16, we were at, you know, family dinner Monday night, aunts, uncles, grandparents, all the good stuff. And my dad hugged my daughter, and it was a little bit too long, and I went over there to break it up because it was lasting a long time. And he walked away, and I looked at my daughter, and I said, did that make you uncomfortable? And she said, it really creeped me out.
Mm.
And I said, you will never have to feel that way again. And mm-hmm. that was the last time that my oldest daughter was in his presence.
Mm-hmm.
My middle daughter desperately wants to connect with them. She thinks it's all in my head. But for her safety, I don't allow it. My youngest daughter, who has had the least amount of time with my grandparents, we moved out of state for a while, just turned 11, and I had brought her over several times with me, never allowing her to be alone with my parents, never leaving the room. She always sat next to me on the couch. It was very, very guarded. But several months ago, she had a bad reaction to, of all things, you know, the puberty movies that everyone watches. She's at that age. So she watched it, and she had a meltdown in school. So I picked her up, and she shared with me that the last time we were over there, my father pinched her butt.
Oh.
And it made her uncomfortable, and she didn't want to tell me because she was ashamed and she was embarrassed, and she loved my dad and didn't want to say anything against him, and she didn't know how to feel. So all of this came up, and I'm hearing her, and this is the same conversation I had with myself at 11. So that's it.
Yeah.
That was the breaking point.
Wow. Well, you said that your parents are still alcoholics, and
yes.
You've talked about how you've estranged yourself from your father. I'm wondering how you deal with them now.
It's some days it's very easy for me to keep them at a distance, but there are days where I still want my mom and dad. I know in my head that they will never be what I want them to be, that they are not capable of being there the way I need them to be, but it doesn't change the fact that I want them to be.
I understand. Well, I don't understand because I haven't had that experience, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
What would you say to others who need to heal from the trauma of the effects of alcoholism within their family? Any words of advice?
Listen to yourself. Just because you've all experienced an event does not mean that you all have the same experience. Something would happen with my father, and my mother would be like, and she would be there, and she'd be like, oh, no, 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 that's not how it happened. And my dad would say, oh, I blacked out. I don't remember that. You know, that didn't really happen. And it did happen. It happened to me, and I experienced it in a way that was very harmful. So even if others aren't willing to recognize your reality of that event, you should acknowledge it.
Well, that's some good advice. Have you ever tried any 12-step programs to help you with this?
You know, as a teenager, I had friends that would bring me to their AA meetings and Alateen, or Al-Anon, I'm sorry. And that was helpful, that I could understand a little bit of what my parents were going through. So it gave me a little insight, a little more compassion, a little more forgiveness for my family. But I didn't pursue it as an adult.
Well, let's change subjects a little bit. This is a spiritually themed program. Let me ask you what your early spiritual and religious life was like.
My parents were not very religious. At the age of 12, I really had this void in my life, and I was looking to fill it. And I joined my best friend's church. I threw myself into it. I was the youngest member of the church and went to all of the classes. I excelled at everything that they did. I was awarded medals and put on the board and ran a youth group and did Bible study. And it was great until it wasn't great. It was something to fill the hole, and it did that for a while until my hole got bigger.
And what was that about?
Well, that happened about the time that I really acknowledged that these things happened to me. They weren't just in my head. And, people were preaching forgiveness, and I didn't want to. I was very angry. And I started remembering more and having more nightmares, and it was beyond what I could reconcile with the church. So I started exploring other religions, and kind of took a little something from here, about something from there, and really developed my spirituality as opposed to a religious doctrine. And that's ever evolving, and that has seemed to be very helpful.
Well, let's take a look at what your early concept of God was and how that's changed over the years.
He was, as a child, God was very punitive. He was something to be afraid of. Everything as a child and a young teenager focused around sin and being bad and being a sinner and not being a good person. And that's all I wanted to be. I mean, I just wanted to be good. I wanted to feel good. I wanted to be good. I wanted others to look at me and see good. And in the younger years, my God did not give me that.
And how has that changed for you?
Well, I believe in a higher power. I won't say it's a God. I think it's something that lives in each of us, and it is what we make it, what we feed it, and it's all about energy.
Well, I can accept that. It fits in with some of my notions about God. And it's interesting because many people I've talked to, in fact, I think almost every single person has, their early concept of God was that of a God of judgment.
Yes.
And it sounds like that was your impression of God.
Yeah.
I was told when I got into recovery, 12-step recovery, that if the God you had wasn't working for you, reinvent it. And that's when I thought about what Jesus was teaching, which was love. And he spoke of the God of love. And so that's the God I embraced, a God that gave, extended, unconditional love. And so that's what I started to practice in my life. And as I practiced it, I found that more and more that was flowing to me. Has that been your experience?
Well, I've personally... my biggest thing, and my kids will tease me about it, is kindness counts, positive energy, what you put out there, you get back.
Yes.
And I send my positive energy to my friends and my family who are not well, or when they are sharing something joyous in their life, What I put out is what I look for to put back in, and I don't settle for anything less than what I put out.
Good for you. Well, you obviously sound like you're a spiritual person. What does that mean to you?
It means that I believe in something bigger than myself, that this world was not made willy-nilly, that we have a higher purpose beyond living a good life.
What is that? Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Oh, well, I wanted you to continue your thought because you didn't sound like we were finished.
Oh. I just feel like everything happens for a reason. And when we put positive energy out there, you're more likely to get it back.
I kind of jumped in there. You talked about a higher purpose. What is that for you?
It's smiling at the stranger who seems rather grouchy at the pharmacy. It is sharing a bit of yourself with someone in the waiting room for the doctor's office who's going through some kind of ordeal. It's our job to make the world a better place, and I have no doubt that's our higher purpose. It's love. It's kindness.
Amen.
It's compassion.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a faith challenge?
I wouldn't say it's a challenge. It's more of evolving. When it's gotten to the point where it doesn't quite work for me, I've changed it a little bit. I took some classes on Buddhism, and there was a lot in it that resonated with me. And then there was a lot of Wiccan ideals that just struck me to the core. Be kind, harm none. Again, what you put out, you receive tenfold, that kind of thing. So it's kind of evolved. I wouldn't say it's ever been a crisis.
Okay. Well, what would you say to somebody who's had a faith crisis or that is struggling to find God?
I think you said it best when, you know, you found rather a punitive God, you found a loving God. I think it's about perspective and not just that, but as you grow and change, your needs change. And so you would look for that in any relationship in your life. You would look to have those new needs and those new challenges met. So I think it's more not a crisis of faith as it is a time of transition. And I would share that this is your stuff evolving. And you create it. You have a hand in creating it. So take it where you want it to go to get you what you need.
So in other words, you're responsible for your own growth.
Yes.
I like that. Well, shifting gears again, you've been very open about the fact that you've suffered from mental illness and that you have had a bipolar disorder. I'm wondering what kind of dysfunction that's caused and what have been your challenges in recovery?
It's caused quite a bit of problems. I don't even know where to start.
We'll start at the beginning. When did it start for you?
I really noticed it as a late in my teen years, and depressions, not get out of bed, covers drawn, shades closed, and just begging God to let me die, that I could not get up another, I couldn't get through another minute. I spent a lot of time in the fetal position in the dark, just trying to sleep. Because if I was asleep, then I wouldn't be feeling so awful.
Personally, because I have shared that challenge myself, I can remember those days when I was supposed to get up to work and I wouldn't get up. I'd say just a few more minutes, and a few minutes would turn into a few hours.
Yeah.
And the anxiety would just mount and mount because people pleaser that I was, I thought that I had to do it, but there was
yeah.
no way I could do it, you know, so it was devastating.
And it rocks your very core of who you think you are.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever suicidal?
Yes, I was. I had a suicidal attempt when I was 18. It had gotten that bad.
Mm. What happened?
I went to the medicine cabinet and I took everything I could find in it. And a friend who I was living with came home and, you know, called 911 and they came and they brought me to the hospital where they pumped me my stomach and fed me charcoal and all kinds of nastiness. But but two wonderful friends of mine came to see me in the ER, and then when I was brought to CPEP, and they brought me flowers, my favorite flowers, and they brought me pictures of my cat, which it sounds silly, but it was the only real tie I had to this world.
Mm.
It was like the only thing I could think about when I was there is, oh, I have to get home to feed my cat. Not to take care of Tia, not to keep breathing, but I have this little life form dependent on me. And then that worked for a little while, and then I became horribly depressed again. But God, higher power, whatever you'd like to call it, works in mysterious ways. And I became pregnant at a young age, but I'm not too young. And then I had something to live for, someone to live for, someone who needed me. And I also found that I needed her probably more than she needed me, but that helped get me through a lot of dark days.
That's wonderful. Now, when did you first receive help? Was that during the hospitalization after the suicide attempt?
I had started going to therapy before, but in all honesty, it's so easy to say what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's less work, and you know, you just, I can get away with this. I can do this, you know. And then there are people telling me, well, just fake it until you make it. And so that kind of was my thing, but it really was not being genuine to myself.
Mm.
So it wasn't until after my daughter was born and her father left us, and I started realizing that I needed to become a healthy person so that I could pass these skills on to my daughter, because I knew nothing about being healthy, not mentally, not physically, nothing. And I just did not have the skills. I was not taught the skills. I did not have role models to watch using skills. So after she was born, I started going to to counseling, and it was more life skills than really counseling. And it was about being mindful of how I was feeling, how I was handling a problem. And as I said, I got married. I had a wonderful man who stood by me and was very kind and caring and held my hand and supported our family so that I could grow and I could get well.
When did you start taking your recovery seriously? Was that when you entered into counseling the second time?
It was after I had my daughter.
Okay.
I had my daughter at 19, and as soon as I had her, it was, you know, the weight of responsibility is I cannot have more bad days than I have good days. What is going to happen to my child? She saved me. She made me want to be better.
Lucky you.
I know. I tell her all the time that she was the one thing God could give me to tether me to this earth at that time in my life. And I truly believe it.
Now, have you received medical help for your bipolar condition?
I have. At first, I was diagnosed as major depressive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on some medication for that. And I felt bubbly and I felt good. And it felt good to feel good. And then I got to feeling a little too good.
Mm.
And I thought I was invincible.
Mm.
I decided I could be a full-time single mother of two, that I could attend college full-time with my children under schooling age years, and that I didn't have a car, so we walked everywhere, and I felt that I could have double knee surgery at the same time and do it all. And I really had no one in my life to say, that's insane. My husband and I at the time were separated, and he really didn't want to see it, didn't want to deal with it, and didn't want to fight with me about it because I really believed that I could do it all.
Well, would you characterize? Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No. What were you going to ask?
No, I'd like to have you finish your thought so you don't lose it.
Well, it was just I thought I could do it all, and then it came crashing down on me. I had my double knee surgery. I was in a wheelchair. I lived upstairs. I couldn't get up and down the stairs to get out to go to college, to go to the grocery store, to go to doctor's appointments, to go to counseling, got my children, and like they were very little. So that came crashing down. I lost my apartment. I went inpatient for several months, at which point my husband moved the children in with him and moved me in anywhere because I was living in the hospital. But when I left the hospital after several months, I went and got an apartment, and we continued on as a family, all of us. But the hospitalization was bad. I mean, something I don't share very often, but I went through electroshock therapy. Back, he said it was like living with an Alzheimer's patient.
Oh my.
That I just couldn't remember things. he had to enroll my children in daycare because I was not capable of caring for them. Kind of funny, but sad. He would take me to the store to go pick out movies to watch. And he said that I must have picked out the same movie at least a dozen times.
Mm.
And I would swear up and down that I'd never seen it before. I read one book over and over and over again over the summer, and each time I read it, it was new. I forgot my sister-in-law's name. I didn't talk to my parents for a year because that's about how long it took me to recover from the ECT and get my memories back.
So there have not been lasting effects then?
My memory's a little fuzzy. I have horrible guilt over losing the first year of my middle daughter's life. I don't remember her first steps. Yeah, I struggle with that. But as to physical ramifications of that, my memory's a little fuzzy.
Well, you talked about the hospitalization as being awful. Was it just because of the electroshock therapy, or were there other aspects of it that you found detrimental to your well-being?
Well, time I went in was just for a few weeks, and it was okay, but I hadn't hit my rock bottom. So then I got out so easy to talk the talk, and I kept that up for a few more months until every day was a bad day. Every day was a dark day.
Mm.
Every day I was either weeping uncontrollably or mad as a hatter, screaming and yelling. And those were the only two feelings that I ever had, this amazing despair or this rage. And then I went in and I had this wonderful nurse who said, you know, depression is just anger turned inward. And then it kind of all made sense.
Mm.
And then another gentleman, a wonderful story, a Native American story that has truly inspired me. I won't go into the whole thing, but and there's this snake who's gone through all these troubles, and the wise man asks the snake, I have done everything you said. Why am I not better? And the wise man says, well, silly snake, I told you to be kind, but I never told you to not stop hissing. And so I was like, you know, I am a kind person, but I have a right to be angry. I have a right to stand up for myself. I have a right to my feelings. And I carry him and his little tail with me around, kind of in my pocket for when I need it.
Well, you talked about the period of time when you were invincible. Would you have characterized that as a mania?
Oh, without a doubt. I was spending money like I had it. I was incredibly promiscuous. If whatever challenge I had, I could meet it, and not only could I meet it, I could meet it. Really, really hurt my marriage. And that kind of had lasting ramifications on my marriage, because anytime afterward we ran into problems, it was my medications not working or you're manic, or, you know, you're having a low. It was not ever a problem, a joint problem. It was something wrong with me.
Was that indeed the case?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there were times where that would have been true, but not every time.
Yeah.
And it was more used to manipulate me into compliance.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing what happens when you get a label pinned on you, like mental illness.
Yeah.
People start to perceive you as being ill. And it's a challenge to overcome that and just let the world know that you're human and subject to all kinds of different emotions and that that's normal.
You know, I have a harder time with that in the medical community than I do anywhere else.
Mm.
I have other health problems, but as soon as I step in the doctor's office, the first thing they see is bipolar and discredit everything else.
Yep, yep.
Everything else. Well, yes, I am bipolar, but that doesn't mean that I have diabetes or fibromyalgia or whatever it is. Yeah, that's been the hardest part for me. The majority of people I've met have been very supportive and understanding. You get a few people who are just ignorant, but for whatever reason in the medical community, I have a harder time advocating.
Well, I've had that experience with a couple of doctors. I'll share with the audience. I, too, have a bipolar disorder, which is under control, thank God. But I had two doctors that judged me and blamed everything on the mental illness when I was actually very physically ill. And one of them actually had the audacity, when I was in a place close to death and wasting away, to say to me, physically ill, you're mentally ill. Well, I mean, I got really angry and I fired the doctor. And then later on, when I was asking for help with the disability application, it asked him if he would take me back into his practice, and he said I was too unstable, which was a lie. I mean, he did me a disservice in that if he thought I truly was mentally ill, he should have had me hospitalized, which he didn't do. But, yeah, I'll admit there was mental illness going on at the time, but a lot of it was just due to incredible anger because I was not being heard. I was being judged. And it was very frustrating, and I got very angry, and I became manic. So, you know, I can relate to that. Now, were your manias frightening for you?
They were not frightening while I was going through them. It wasn't until after that I realized that I had hurt myself and hurt my relationships and how scary it was. Yeah, I felt fantastic. And when I first started taking the medication to regulate my mood, I would get upset with the doctors. And I'm like, but you're taking away this wonderful thing that I feel. And they're like, no, trust me, it's not wonderful. And I'm like, but it is. It's the only time I ever feel good. And they're like,
yeah,
not using sound judgment when you're in there. But in a manic, then to have to face the lows that I face.
Well, for me, the beginnings of the mania, the hypomania, were just wonderful. I felt so much energy. I was so creative. I felt like I was on top of the world, invincible, as you said.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was having a lot of spiritual experience, and I'm not going to go back and judge that as being part of the mania. I think that it's just that God was really with me at that point in time. And all kinds of amazing things happened, which I don't think are incredible. But then things became very disorganized. My life became disorganized. I'd go and spend all this money. I was very promiscuous. And it caused a lot of upheaval within my relationship. And it caused me a lot of shame and guilt, too. And I shouldn't have had to feel that way because it was just an illness, like you were talking about your parents and their alcoholism. It's just an illness. All I needed was love and understanding, compassion, somebody to listen to me. And that's when people ran from me. So I don't know if you can relate to any of that.
That's when everyone wanted to be my friend, and everyone wanted to do this, that, and the other thing. And I tend to be very shy, kind of a wallflower, and those were times when I was not. I was very gregarious, and people loved being around me. So it was hard to realize that what I was doing was not okay because I had all these people encouraging me. Never once did my doctor say, you really should not have both knees done at the same time, because that's ridiculous. At no time did anyone say, you know, you entertaining all these individuals is not a good idea. It has ramifications that will last you well after the mania is gone. It was then that my husband and I decided that we were going to have another child. And I just thought I could do everything. And then when I realized that I couldn't, I had already done most of it or was dealing with the ramifications. And then it just made the lows that much worse.
Now, you've talked about being on medication and how you were resistant to taking the mood stabilizing medication or that you didn't like the effect that it had on you. I'm wondering, has medication been helpful to you overall or not?
It has. I've had to tweak it, and my doctor tells me that I'll probably have to tweak it more as they come out with better medicine. I might want to try something and to see if it has a better fit for me. But I'm on medication. I will be on medication for the rest of my life. And I know I need it. I mean, some people are just like, well, why don't you take it when you're just having a bad day? Well, no, it doesn't work that way. It's just like diabetes. You know, I have to have my daily medication to regulate everything. And while I do miss the highs, I don't like what it brings afterward. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't miss the lows.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the worst, aren't they? Yeah. You've talked about some of the effects of your mental illness. Are there any other effects that you haven't covered?
It took me a long time to realize the effects that it had on my relationship. That was probably the most lasting and most damaging, and probably the biggest reason that medication when it makes me feel sick, or I take the medication when I would welcome a high. Or when I want to feel invincible.
Well, what suggestions would you offer to others who are still struggling with mental illness or struggling or resistant to taking medication for whatever reason?
Try it out. Go in with the mind. Know that just because one medication might not work for you doesn't mean that another one paired with a vitamin D won't do the trick. It's a hit or miss. It may have to be tweaked. Your doctor might not get it right the first time. Medicine that you tried 3 years ago might help you 3 years from now. I've done a lot of DBT and mindfulness training, and that has helped me immensely. But I really feel that without my medication, it would be a much harder struggle.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't need it to be harder when there's something out there that can make it manageable. Not easy, just manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a cure-all. It doesn't get rid of everything. You have to change your behaviors. You have to change how you think. But I know for me that medication is a key component in my health.
Well, thank you for being so frank about your challenges. And you've provided a lot of hope for people, I'm sure, who are listening. And now I'd like to just shift gears once again. We only have about 5 minutes left, but I'm interested in hearing about how you dealt with your daughter when she came out to you as a bisexual.
Well, first she came out as a lesbian. And there was a lot of soul searching, and there was a lot of crying. And my family has always been very LGBTQ friendly. And I was not surprised. And the only thing that I had to say to her was, you're lucky if when you find love, it doesn't matter what form it takes. If you're lucky enough to find love, hold on to it. And she had the most amazing girlfriend, and she came to family events, and it was really nice. And so that was kind of a nice experience for my daughter. And then she had been saying, well, you know, I have feelings for this boy, but I really am attracted to this girl. And I'm like, you can appreciate beauty in anyone. It really, gender does not matter. So she, she's decided to just find love wherever she can find it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
What would you say to parents that reject their children because of their sexuality or that are struggling to come to a place of acceptance?
You just want your children to be happy and to be loved. I think it really matters how they do it and who they love. You should just be thankful that they're experiencing it. It may not be the way you would go about it, but it doesn't make it any less right.
Well, thank you for that. I'm hoping the parents that are out there that are struggling, that they realize there are many resources these days, books. There is a wonderful organization called PFLAG, Parents of Friends and Lesbians of Lesbians and Gays, which can provide support and information.
The other thing is they should help your teenager find information. Like I know with my daughter, we had the sex talk, but suddenly we're in a situation where we hadn't had that sex talk. And safety. You know, there are things that you need to do to be safe that are different in a same-sex relationship. So that, I mean, that was the big thing for me was just where do I get this information to help my daughter to be safe?
And where did you find it?
Actually, the Q Center.
Mm-hmm.
They have been a wonderful resource. I've met many good people there, and They don't mind talking to parents. So.
Well, we've come to the end of the hour. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today and being so open and honest. It's been a pleasure to have you, Tina.
Thank you very much.
Well, I hope that my guests will join me again next week. My shows are on Thursday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Next Thursday, I'm going to have the best-selling author, Catherine Alice, who is a relationship expert on. And I have forgotten who's on the show on Friday, so tune in and you'll be surprised. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.